The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So we'll continue on this exploration and connection with these five faculties, the five powers that are faith traditionally, but also trust and confidence can be used, energy, mindfulness, calm or concentration, and wisdom. So I was talking about last week, there's a metaphor or a simile of thinking about mindfulness as like five horses pulling a carriage. So we might imagine that mindfulness is the lead horse, guiding and showing the way. And we might imagine that right behind it are the two horses of trust and energy. So just feel into that for a minute. Trust and energy, side by side, and what that feels like to bring those two together there. What trust offers energy, and energy offers trust. Just feeling that for a minute. And then behind them, the beautiful horses of calm and wisdom. And feeling that energy side by side. How that creates a supportive balance. But the horses, you know, there's this whole, I love this dynamic balancing, you know, between all of these energies. And mindfulness, part of the job of mindfulness is to play with these energies, to notice, oh, what's the relationship? What's going on? Which is stronger? Which is like waning, waxing, you know? Where are these things? Faith without wisdom can lead us blindly into, you know, all kinds of crazy imaginings, right? Illusions. So we need faith and wisdom too, right? Together, side by side, and in balance. Too much wisdom, we lose our heart. Too much faith, we lose our brain, right? And wisdom without trust, not really, I don't know, not so good, right? And trust without calm can kind of lead to maybe blindlessness, you know, certain kind of chasing rainbow feeling, like sort of just too much trust energy, faith energy can be a little bubbly. So needing that grounding of calm so we don't have to just follow. And mindfulness is at the lead. Mindfulness, you know, is showing the way, paying attention, and sort of strengthens with the balance of the different powers, different faculties. And, you know, we all have our own unique strengths. So I'll just, these are other words for these qualities. Some overlap, but some don't, but just notice this pair and kind of see, oh, does this resonate with who you think, you know, your strengths are, what you think your strengths are. Curious and alert. Some people really see themselves as very curious people. Is that how you see yourself? What about calm and serene? Do you see yourself as somebody who stays pretty calm? Other people maybe are more vigorous and energetic. What about you? Is that something you relate, easier, something that's more natural to you, that quality? Or others are really reflective and wise. You know those people, you've met them, right? Maybe you are one. Somebody you go to, who you can talk to, and you know they'll sort of calmly listen and be reflective and have something wise to say or not say. And then there's the heartful and devotional type qualities. So where are your strengths? And, you know, I find it very useful to cultivate and work with and start with the quality that's easiest for you, where you have this natural inclination. And then you can kind of think about what might help balance this, or what might this balance in yourself and in your practice. So let's talk about this word mindfulness for a minute. I'm going to test the waters a little bit and see where our group energy is right now. But if anyone has the energy present to share how you describe and think about mindfulness, how would you define it in your own words? There's two mics on the floor.
I would say awareness of the present.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jill. Maybe just leave it on and hand it. Caitlin. Caitlin, and she can talk and not, or not, and just hand it to the next. Just see if anybody wants to say anything.
I would define mindfulness as an awareness of what's going on internally and externally.
Beautiful. Thank you. Jim, I don't know if you can reach that, but if you have anything to add or not, just pass it on.
Mindfulness, I think there are various definitions depending on who you talk to, but
yep.
For me, today, mindfulness is about continuation of being an object or a condition instead of just seeing it and then going away, the continuation of the attention.
Continuity,
yeah,
beautiful,
continuity, right?
Beautiful.
I think it's been said before, as far as I'm...
Tilt it toward your mouth.
Like that better, okay.
A little more, yes.
Okay, is it on, I guess, okay. Being aware of the present.
Being aware of the present.
Being unaware of the past or the future.
Okay.
I think of mindfulness as directing focus in some way to what you want to be mindful of.
What everybody's saying.
I think it's sort of observing your thoughts without identifying with them. So.
Beautiful. Sue, did you have your hand? Did you want to say something? No? Okay. Great. Beth.
Mindfulness, I think of noticing and observing.
Noticing and observing.
I consider it... connecting with my body and therefore myself.
Beautiful.
I think of it as awareness of what's moving through me and awareness of what's in the world around me.
Beautiful.
Thank you. I think for me it's the opposite of distraction.
Opposite of distraction.
And so attention and presence.
Beautiful.
Is
beautiful.
What I seek. Yeah.
I think of it as being open and aware of and present.
Great.
What's going on?
Great. You want to deliver it to them in case they want to say anything? And then I think Lyman... I don't know if you want to add.
For me,
It is awareness of what is in front of me.
Awareness of what is in front of me, yes.
Mindfulness for me is the moment-to-moment observation of whatever comes into my awareness and not rejecting or accepting everything, but just try to stay neutral.
Beautiful. Beautiful. You sure you don't want to add, Lyman? Your own words.
I guess noticing all my senses at the moment.
Beautiful. I'd like to hear that. Great. Jackie?
I would say it's all
that. Use the mic, please, dear.
I would agree with what everyone said, and I would say it's hard work.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. It requires effort. Yeah. Yep, and remembering. So remembering, sati, is the Pali word for mindfulness. And it's often translated or often said, you know, you often hear it said that it's remembering. But it's not remembering as in memorization. It's remembering to be present. It's another word has been used is recollection, recollecting, right? To be aware, to be present. And we forget. Why do we forget? What happens? How is it that we lose our mindfulness? Uh-oh, we need the mics again to capture it for the people online. Although I could just, if it's one word, I can just repeat. So what happens? Why do we forget? What's the number one reason you forget to be mindful? Somebody's pointing at their head, thinking. Yeah. What else? Anything else?
Hurrying.
Hurrying. Beautiful, Sue. Yep. Hurrying, thinking. What else?
Distractions.
Distractions. For example,
too many
to name. Phones, internet surfing,
mind,
fantasies, thoughts, right? Our needs. What do I need? I need to get this, planning, I need to get that. Rehearsing. Preparing, rehearsing, you know, or ruminating, you know, remembering and remembering and ruminating.
Reacting.
Oh my gosh, boy, are we not mindful when we're reacting, right? Oh, yes. The thing that's interesting, have you ever seen that, there's like a picture of an iceberg in the water, and it, you know, points out how much of the iceberg is under the water, and the metaphor, the simile to how much is in the conscious mind, awareness, and how much is in the unconscious. That sort of, so much is going on under the surface for us. And that stuff, you know, with the default network in the mind that's sort of oriented toward just keeping us fixated, trying on tasks, trying to do things, that little network in there is going to be popping out all kinds of things from under the surface, bringing up all kinds of things to get us to chase them. You know? So there's a really good reason that we get lost. We get lost. There's so, you know, there's this kind of survival strategy that the brain has cultivated over our evolution to keep us kind of orienting and doing and wanting and you know, sort of moving. One could say. But it doesn't, it's really out of whack. And it's like literally not even a fraction of a second of losing concentration, and that the default network gets moving, gets reactivated. So when we cultivate mindfulness and we're practicing in a way of continuity, as Jim was mentioning, moment to moment. Many of you mentioned that. But this continuity, you can sort of be moment to moment aware of what's happening, these various feelings, sensations, thoughts, ideas, the environment, just, but it's so close to each other. There's this flow, this continuity of being aware. And with that flow, with that continuity, we start to cultivate what is considered more concentration. And this is where we start to see how the mind works. We start to see these inner workings, these processes that are going on in the mind. And as we get concentrated, as we get connected to a flow of experience, and there's also the kind of concentration that comes from following an object like the breath. Just staying in this, like, really, I like to think about it like riding waves. You're on a surfboard and you stay connected to the surfboard, right? The surfboard rides up and down with the breath, and you just sort of are the surfboard riding the waves of breath. As they come in and go out, sometimes there's pauses before the next wave, but you're just riding, floating on the water as you go. And you just keep going. There's this continuity, this development of collectedness, of calm, of concentration. And with that collection of attention, the default network shuts down. It gets quiet. It's kind of pleasant when it gets quiet. But it doesn't, like I said, doesn't take much for it to reactivate. So if we're staying close to this moment-to-moment awareness, we can get close enough to maybe see there arising or this sort of new thought, this new thing. Oh, wait a minute, now I'm thinking about planning, right? Often, when we're going about life, or even when we're meditating until we get more concentrated, that thought will come up, and it'll be then the next thought, that maybe the next thought or the next thought after that, that we might wake up. We might go, oh, right? It's sort of like, we usually go down the path a little bit, sometimes a very long ways, right? But just back to this iceberg metaphor, there's a lot that's going on under the surface. There's a lot that our brain is doing to let us function in the world so that we don't have to consciously process it. So, and all this, the memories and information we have, it's not always sitting at the surface, right? But, you know, we have this active energy, this default network mode that's always pulling things up and out of this iceberg. So there's a lot of it. There's a lot. And maybe there's an allure. Maybe there's something attractive to us or compelling to us about getting lost in thought, about losing mindfulness. Maybe also what happens over time is that novelty diminishes with time because there's less and less that's new for us. Right? So novelty tends to keep us more in the present moment. Something that's new catches our attention, we're learning it, kind of keeps us here, keeps things a little more sparkly, you know what I mean? A little more vibrant. But if you notice after a while, things lose that sparkle, that glitter, that sort of aliveness. And one of the reasons for that is that the brain takes over. It's known. So instead of actively processing what it is, it's almost like a wallpaper that comes up. For example, with trees. At some point, it's easy to sort of have trees just be the wallpaper of tree. By wallpaper, I mean kind of like an image or a substitute or a reference point, a symbol for tree in our mind. And we're not really seeing the tree that's right in front of us. We stop taking in the sort of uniqueness and the aliveness. Another way to think about this that's going on is that our brain can only be actively processing so much at one time. So right now, my brain has a picture of this whole room, of all of you in it. But as I'm looking this direction, for example, the people on my periphery end up in a photographic kind of frame. I'm not tracking all of your little micro movements and what's happening with you because I'm tuning in right now to Barry. And so the brain, because it can't take in all the stimulus at once, it sort of picks and chooses based on where I'm directing my attention. So, but all of this is to sort of point out that there are very functional aspects of the mind, very useful, necessary aspects that contribute to why it's hard to stay mindful. Does it make sense what I'm saying? Other things might have to do with habits, habits that we have. So we develop, like tying a shoe becomes a habit. It's very easy, right? And we can do it mindlessly. We don't have to pay attention. There's a muscle memory, something that takes over and can just tie the shoe for us. So there's more and more of that happening all the time as well. And that, you know, we sort of just takes over and mindfulness falls to the background. This is really, really true of things we do a lot, daily routines, activities. Driving our car, putting on our shoes, making our beds, brushing our teeth. You know, all these things, making our coffee, many, many things that we do all the time, end up in this sort of automatic pilot mode. We can do them zoned out. We can do them without really being aware, without really thinking about them. Automaticity. It's really useful, and it's really not, too. So, you know, a couple other really basic examples of automatic pilot are like arriving home and not recalling getting off the freeway. Right? Any ever happened to you? Yeah. It's like, well, you drove, you got there, but we blacked out, you know, essentially. We were being unmindful or on automatic pilot. Maybe I'll engage you again and ask a question, which is, what happens to you? What's the experience of being on autopilot like? What does it feel like when you have driven home and you don't really remember getting there?
That particular experience would be discomforting scary.
And scary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Versus the experience of driving and being acutely attuned to the sun or the green of the grass and the wind in the trees and the sound of the birds. How does it feel when we get home and we're connected that way? What does that feel like?
Vibrant and alive.
Yeah. So automatic pilot can lead to feelings of kind of emptiness or dissatisfaction, this dis-ease, right? Because, what happened? Where, what, who am I? Where was I? How, you know, like that's a kind of a stark thing to recognize. And too much automatic pilot really disengages that curiosity, right? We lose kind of more, we disengage from creative, artistic, or critical thinking. We just kind of move into this. It's a little bit like a, I don't know, the weird image that just came to mind is like a thick, warm soup. You know, there's just this sort of to it, you know. So mindfulness could be thought of as the opposite of automatic pilot. And, you know, you guys all offered beautiful descriptions, so paying attention to this moment requires conscious effort, right? So that's where, Jackie, you were saying it takes work. And the more automatic pilot we've got going, the more work it is, right, to try and shift in. Mindfulness is something we all share. Everybody is mindful, right? To some degree or another. It's an inherent ability. And it's something that we can cultivate, that we can grow in ourselves, our capacity. And one of the most beautiful things that it does is it operates in contrast to our basic survival instincts. So we have this autonomic nervous system that has evolved to keep us safe, right, from danger. So we can fight, we can run away, and we can freeze. And these are automatic. And some of us have it happen a lot because of our own kind of experiences in life where we have more threatening, more danger, more difficulty. And those fight, flight, and freeze responses get triggered very quickly. Others of us, maybe not so much. But the autonomic nervous system adapts to what our experience has been. And it just does its thing. It doesn't ask us. It doesn't say, hey, Tanya, do you need to fight right now? That's mindfulness. It doesn't say, oh, you don't need to freeze. It's okay. You can move. That's mindfulness. And it doesn't say, do you need to run? It's just that we're running, we're avoiding, we're turning away. And it's mindfulness that goes, wait, you know. So growing our mindfulness can really help us actually start to retrain our nervous system. And let it know it doesn't need to take over. Most of the time, the way our nervous system was designed, right, was to deal with situations in the wild, with animals and, you know, sort of things that require no thinking, just reacting. But that's pretty rare in our experience, actually, most of us, hopefully. So the closer we are to paying attention to our experience in this moment-to-moment way with the arising and passing, the more we can start to notice, oh, what's happening in our brain? How is this experience, you know, how are we responding to this experience? And some people brought up knowing their body, being aware of what's happening in their body. And that's a great thing to track because your body will give you a lot of information about what your brain is doing, a ton. Because our autonomic nervous system affects our breathing, our heart rate, the cortisol in our system, you know, all of these things. And those things are feelable and are feedback and let us know how our brain is processing, that iceberg part of our brain, how it's processing, what's going on. So one of the things that I like to emphasize about how we meditate, and this is part of what people have kind of, mentioned in terms of mindfulness. And so I shouldn't just say meditate, but in a meditation, maybe it's a little bit concentrated, so it's really can be really powerful, is our attitude. How are we paying attention? Please, every time you meditate, ask yourself multiple times, how am I paying attention? What is the quality of my, maybe the heart quality present in how I'm attending? What's the attitudinal quality of how I'm attending? If we continually practice with a cold and judgmental, impatient attitude, those tendencies in us are going to get stronger. We are going to grow them. So setting an intention to be kind, open, allowing, and sort of reconnecting with that, because it's something's going to come up in your awareness, some memory, some thought, something that's going to trigger, I don't like that. I'm so stupid. I'm blah, blah, blah. And then that energy starts to take over if we aren't careful. The neuroplasticity in the brain, the neuroscience shows that repeated things start to shape our brain. We start to shape the brain. So this particular shaping makes a big difference in how your practice and your life and your heart will be evolving. Incredibly important. So I think I'm done with my share, but I want to just see if there's any questions before we move into breakout groups. How was that? Was that understandable, trackable? Any concerns or questions or confusions? They're all welcome. Jackie?
With what you said, if I do my meditation in the evening and I've had a really busy day, that intent is much harder than if I were to do it in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, I'm on automatic pilot to go get ready and go to work and do the things that I need to do. Is that true for most, or is there a suggestion as to when to do mindful, or is it more that I just need to keep doing it to a point where I'm, where it gets easier?
Well, is it true? I believe that's your experience. So I believe that's true for you. We are all different because we all have been responding to our own life and minds differently. So if I were you, I'd trust what you just said is true. And then I would ask myself, okay, so if I know this about myself, this is my conditioning, this is how my brain has been shaped, what might help me to remember attitude? And so you might have a whole number of responses come up. One might be that you write down your inspiration and you reflect on it before you meditate. Another might be that you try that in the morning and then you try it at night and you notice when it worked better. You might, we just need to start to trust that you know about your own mind and then decide how you want to work with it and then pay attention to the results. Don't assume that if you try something, it's going to necessarily be the exact right thing. Pay attention to the impact, the results. That's your feedback. And so let's say you write this inspirational, beautiful thing and you put it on a beautiful piece of paper and you spend some time and you light a candle and you create a way to help your brain pay attention, and then you do your evening meditation because it's easier, and
oh, yeah, I feel softer. It feels a little bit softer, you know? Okay, like, keep on, right? But because of the things I also mentioned earlier around novelty, and you might need to change it up again. Or maybe not, because maybe you'll start to have shaped it in a way that it starts to grow. And it just, like, it's like I have associations with going to the Insight Retreat Center where my whole physiological being just goes, oh, you know, when I start to go over the hill to Santa Cruz. Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Right here on the chair, yeah.
So to talk about the autonomic or autopilot, I like being in the zone. I like, you know, where I haven't thought about anything and yet something has been created. Can you speak more to that, I guess? Because that seems to work against all that you said around mindfulness, and yet I emerge from being in the zone and in the flow with a very relaxed and calm state.
Yeah. So you said, you know, maybe it, maybe there are absolutely good times to do this. Absolutely, to daydream or to let your mind just, you know. So it's not that we can't ever have. We need this. Right? We need the brain to operate the way it does. Can we choose? Can we choose? Can we know and use our wisdom, you know, to know, like, what's the right amount? And pay attention, again, to the results, the impact, you know? And just knowing the way conditioning works is that things like that are pleasant and kind of, I don't know, can be lulling. They can lull us, and we can sort of incline more and more toward them because of this innate desire to want to feel good. And we can find ourselves wanting to do more and more of it. And so just notice, we need to pay attention to how we're conditioning ourselves. Again, holding wisdom, holding mindfulness up front, and choosing, and paying attention. Oh, more, it was 5 minutes before was enough. Now I'm doing 20 minutes of it, you know, three times a day. So, you know, just tracking what's happening to your conditioning, especially if it involves letting go of mindfulness. Yeah, Barry. Yeah.
Is it, we only define mindfulness when we're aware of being mindful? I find, for example, I'm driving down the freeway and someone cuts me off. And it used to be, oh, he's a jerk. But now I'm, we can say, well, he's a human being. He's not a jerk.
Beautiful.
Or I see a person looks different, maybe overweight or something from the normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just think, well, he or she's a person, has their own issues, and I don't scorn them. And is that being mindful? Even though I'm not aware of it.
Well, there is a quality of, I mean, what that sounds like is that you've worked with growing compassion in yourself. That you have grown compassion is really what I'm hearing, Barry. And so you're seeing the evidence of an automatic compassionate response.
It's not mindfulness.
Well, mindfulness was necessary or is necessary to, you know, help your mind shift from critical to compassion, for example. We have to be paying attention and notice if the mind is being critical so that we can help reorient toward compassion. And then over time, just like all of these things, we're conditioning. And then we condition the mind to orient and move. It's like a snowball, you know, it grows and starts creating its own momentum. Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. So let's get into groups of three or four so we have a little bit of time to do a small group discussion. And just kind of move and find a few people and introduce yourselves, your first name, and
maybe, you know, just a teeny, teeny 10 words about your relationship to IMC or practice, your choice, just by way of connecting and introducing yourselves. Okay? So we keep it short so I can give you some discussion questions. You can make groups of three or four. Yeah. So we explored in the small groups your superpower, which of these faculties is your superpower, and also which of these faculties might be supportive for helping bring balance to your superpower, right? And mindfulness is one of the five faculties, right? And that's what we spent a lot of time talking about today, is mindfulness, right? And these faculties are part of supporting, and that mindfulness pays attention to. Yeah. So what's your takeaway from your small group discussion, from your exploration? What's your takeaway? Would a few people share what it was like to connect and think about having a superpower in this way and balancing it and how you might want to balance it? What came up for you? The mics are over here on the floor. Let's get you a mic so you can answer that for all of us. Thank you.
Oh. What is complimentary?
Yeah, what kind of struck you as you explored this, you know, your superpower and what might balance your superpower? How might this support your practice, your mindfulness?
Oh, like I was saying in the group that sometimes you feel very energetic, and you're type A, and you're just doing stuff, and you're writing, checking out stuff on the list.
Yep.
And every day has a list, Saturday, Sunday, you know. And that's the way you work.
Right.
You know, you're always doing something. And the reward for that is probably at the end of the day, you pat yourself on the back and say, gee, I got a lot done.
Okay.
And checked off all this and that, and you're very productive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, are you reflective? Did you take time to see what you were doing, you know, were you aware of what you were doing while you were doing it? And I think for this solution, for the busyness or the
super energy, yeah,
mindfulness is the solution.
Great.
Because it stops you right there. And instead of getting ahead of yourself all the time,
mm-hmm,
thinking in your mind, you're always getting, it stops and say, well, what's going on right now? What's known right now?
That's what mindfulness would do. And then... Mm-hmm. And that mindfulness would also say, what's needed here to balance this out?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the other quality, what would help the energy balance out? It might be calm. It might be wisdom, being wise about putting too much effort in, not having balance, being exhausted at the end of the day. Or it might be feeling heartful, like being more... having faith that, you know, I'll do what I can. So mindfulness will notice, just like you described, Jim, and then we can ask, what would help? Which of these other five powers can help balance this superpower of mine? Right? Make sense? Beautiful. Thank you all so much. Really nice to be here with you tonight. Thank you. May we all be carried in a beautiful carriage with all five horses and make our way through life mindfully.